everyone, welcome to the Racing Writers Podcast. I'm your host, Kelly Crandall. I hope you all are having a great holiday season, and I've got a great episode for you today. It's a two-for-one, as I mentioned at the end of last week's episode, with BJ McLeod and Matt Tift. BJ and Matt are here to talk about the first year of Live Fast Motorsports in the NASCAR Cup Series. BJ is going to take us into his mind as both a driver and an owner, what it's like being behind the wheel, what it's like when he's not driving, watching the car, their budget, meeting goals that they had for 2021, and what it looks like going into the future. Whereas Matt is going to talk to us about just being back involved in racing after having to give up the steering wheel because of his health issues, how good it has felt to be involved again, his definition of success, and also looking towards the future. So not a whole lot to say in this intro because it's pretty self-explanatory. It's a great conversation with the two of them. I had BJ on the phone first. They were very busy, so I couldn't get them together, but I hopped on the phone with BJ first, and then Matt is afterwards. So I hope you enjoy it. First up, BJ McLeod and then Matt Tift on the Racing Writers Podcast. All right, we are ready to go. Yeah, that's not a problem at all. So, BJ, first off, just start with, I'm sure you've been dissecting the year and how it's gone. So, kind of maybe the takeaways at first or things that stand out.
You know, basically, just unbelievably cool to be able to get first year of cup ownership under our belts. And Matt used this term going into Phoenix the other day, we're pulling the rookie stripes off, and like, that's crazy, you know, like it feels like yesterday that we just bought the charter and started the team. You know, it's just crazy, it's already a year in. So just very happy with, you know, the performance of our guys, and met our goal this year of being an average of 30th, which I think we did it like 17 or 18 times. And you know, just definitely knew our budget, knew where we were going to run, and we went out there and did it. And you know, obviously as a racer, we want to be more competitive. We don't like 8 lap down finishes at some of the mile and a halves. Like, that stuff definitely isn't fun, but you got to have, you know, a vision, and you got to have a business plan and goals, and we definitely met every single one of those this year. And it's pretty cool to get home from Phoenix and look at all of that and just enjoy going from, you know, like I said, purchasing the charter, starting the team, and saying, okay, we got to be at Daytona in 2 months, and now we're coming home from Phoenix and we're a year in. And it was just a lot of fun and cool to see it all happen.
That's awesome. That's so cool to hear. What's the biggest difference, BJ, in putting the car on track this year as Live Fast Motorsports versus when you fielded a car for just a couple races last year?
Well, last year was just for fun. I knew I was trying to head towards ownership, and not just for a couple races, full-time ownership is what I should say. And like I said, last year was just no pressure. We do this, we don't do it, no big deal. You know, this year we have to show up. Like, there's not a choice. And we've committed to 36 races. And truthfully, Matt and I have committed to several years. So it was definitely a big, you know, wake up call to get it all done and be like, all right, well, here we are. This is happening, you know. So it was definitely, that's the difference, right? Like, we didn't have a choice.
How was it when you weren't in the car? You ran 28 races, so you ran the bulk of the season. But what was it like, or what did you do when you weren't in the car? What was BJ, the owner, doing?
I was wearing flip-flops, driving my golf cart around, watching the car. That was pretty much it. I was enjoying it, too. We had some good drivers in the car at the road courses and obviously the dirt race, too, with Shane. It was cool because I've never got to enjoy just the ownership side of the cup team. Okay. I've done it a couple of times, actually quite a bit now with Xfinity, but it was fun because I love being a driver, but I actually love being an owner too. And it was special those weekends to be able to just hang out with Matt and be more on what he's living every week now, and just enjoy those weekends and have fun working with the drivers and the team and just seeing them do their thing. You know, when you get to the cup level, you got such good people and the right amount of people, and you know, you got all the tires you need, and it's just a different deal than we've had in the past with some of the Xfinity stuff we've just had to make happen, right? Like, every guy does at least twice the work they're supposed to, and we run on scuff tires and things. And it was cool to be an owner and just see that you really can't cut any corners on the cup side, and you have to just make stuff happen.
not cutting corners. That's interesting you brought that up, because I started by asking kind of how you dissected the year, but more specifically, I wanted to ask, what's the biggest takeaway of running a full-time Cup team? You mentioned at the top there that you guys met your goals and were doing things that you wanted to do, but again, going from having fun last year, only running a couple races, to putting a car and a team and a company on track all year long, what's the biggest takeaway of running a full-time Cup team?
That I want to do it for the next 20 years, pretty much. That's just that simple. I really enjoyed, there was definitely some challenging times. It's difficult. It's the highest stock car series in the country, and I definitely seen some stuff that's difficult. You got to work and make it all come together, but it definitely proved to me that we had the right vision, you know, 15 years ago when I thought this was what I wanted to do, and there's no doubt it's what I want to do.
Let's go more into how you were measuring success this year. Again, you talked about how you met all your goals. What was the bar? What was the standard going into a weekend that you guys felt like this is what we are aiming for? This is how we'll be successful. Just further take us into how this team operated in that sense. What was a good weekend? What was a bad weekend? Break that down. What was successful for you guys this year?
So when we started out, we kind of just looked at everything and what all we had budget-wise, and we were putting the team together, and it's a first-year situation. And we just said, you know, if we can run 30th on average, that's where we need to be at to meet our budget and, you know, not be in the bottom three of the charters and just, you know, set the team up for more success in 22 and so on. And that's why I say, you know, we met our goals, because we ran on average 30th, and we had, you know, one top 10, I think, one or two top 25 somewhere in that area, and then a lot of 27th, 28th, 29th, and 30th. Like, it was a good amount of those. We had, I think, one DNF on my side with me driving, and then Shane got crashed at the Bristol Dirt Race. So very low amount of DNFs is my point, and that was something that Matt and I had, you know, talked about. We just, no matter what our budget, we can put cars out there that are reliable, and we definitely did that. Our team pulled that off for us, because we definitely had the stuff we needed, but we would have liked to have had more people throughout the year, but it didn't work out right, and our guys definitely stepped up to where I say, you know, we had the right amount of people at the beginning of the call. We did, right? But it's just, you always want one or two more to make it perfect, and our guys didn't have that for sure. So it's, you know, it, I think that's part of the 30th place budget, is knowing that, you know, some of that stuff is not 100%, but we went out there and made it happen for our first year, and we're on pace to be able to make that better for 22 and so on.
Well, yeah, I was going to follow up by saying, what does that set you up for next year in being able to do that and add more people or more resources?
Well, it's just very exciting for the next gen car coming. There's so many unanswered questions. You know, we know we're going to be a lot closer on Aero Map. We know that we have the same suspension as the top 10 cars. We know we have the same body. Like I said, there's, you know, definitely a lot smaller box on things to move around and get an advantage. So we're just excited to get to that first, you know, not Daytona. I'm definitely excited for Daytona, but the first, I'd say Fontana, Vegas, that run right there, like, excited to go see where we're at on our bigger, you know, downforce tracks, because we really believe that it's going to close up the gap a lot and, you know, hopefully get us a lot closer to that pack to be more competitive.
Going back to talking about on track and the things you guys did there, you broke down some of the DNFs and things, and different drivers were in the car. Was the high of the year, BJ, would you say it was 9th at Daytona or 22nd at Texas? Because I believe 22nd at Texas was the highest finish on a non-super speedway race, so that's why I throw that in there. So was it 9th at Daytona for the top 10 or 22nd at Texas?
Definitely 9th at Daytona. For nothing else, I'm a Florida boy, and I grew up, you know, 2 hours from that track, and I've drove by it 1,000 times, and it's just unbelievable racing. Like, that, the draft is, it's boring for a second, and then all of a sudden it's the most exciting thing you've ever done in your life, right? So to get a top 10 there and miss those wrecks and stuff was really cool, and to get my first top 10 in the Cup Series was awesome, right? So, you know, that was definitely the highlight for me as a driver. as an owner, it definitely is more of a full season situation where I really felt a lot of accomplishment going into the track at Phoenix on Sunday, just thinking about, you know, the nerves and the worry that Matt and I had, you know, just 12 months before that, knowing that we had succeeded and completed a full year and done it the way we wanted to do it. Like, it, that was a big accomplishment for the year for me as an owner. Like, it definitely will stick out forever.
What was it like to just be in the Cup Series as a driver? Take out ownership for a second. But again, you ran a couple races last year to run 28 of the 36 races this year, to be ingrained in the Cup Series. What was that like just as a driver?
It is, you know, I guess an unbelievable opportunity that I'll always be thankful for every time we get to do it, right? And this is the most races I've ran in 1 year, I do believe. And it's definitely hard when you run 30th every week, right? Like, you get you beat up a little bit and you're like, man, can I drive further up or not? Is this all I got? Like, you just don't know. And there were some situations where I got to race Josh Berry for the free pass at Dover, and granted, I think it was his first ever Cup start, but you know, he wins one or two Xfinity races, and I think at that time he'd only won one, and then I'm racing him for the free pass in the Cup car and actually got the free pass. So it's like, as a driver, it's hard to run that many races and be around that 30th mark every single week and not start to doubt yourself. And then you see people get in cars that are somewhat similar to yours on budget, and you can race close to them, you know, like you can run with them, and then they go to another series and they win. You know, it's like, that kind of made me feel better on that side of it. But it's just very difficult to go every week and run 30th and get down as a driver. And that was the hardest part about it. Like, it, you know, like I said, something that I'm very thankful for and want to keep doing. It's just difficult to not be where you want to be in, you know, on the competition side.
Did you have any driver on one shoulder, owner on the other shoulder, fighting each other, if that makes sense? Because as a driver, you want to succeed, you want to go fast, but as the owner, you know what it costs if you tear that thing up. Did you ever have those moments of fighting yourself?
Yeah, I definitely had some of those this year, because I had more worry with the charter and then the bottom three scenario than I've never had to deal with that. I've done very well at getting that out of my system, because I've been an owner driver for 6 or 7 years now in Xfinity. And at the first, it really bothered me. Like, the first year or two I did it, it was very, very difficult. Now, I really race and drive how I want, but I'm just smart enough now, because I've got so many starts and I've done so much, that it's not really the owner side of me that holds me back. It's the driver side that knows this is how you get results, right? And I think that's part of what comes with being a Cup driver, is you start to learn a lot more of the situation and how the races play out. And, you know, somewhat of maybe a conservative owner, it is also what you learn as a veteran or a more experienced driver in the Cup Series, because it kind of correlates from one to the other, right? Like, it just kind of is the same. Now, obviously, you know, I would like to be up there fighting for those top 15s, top 10s, and being on edge, on the ragged edge every single lap, but I do drive my car to the edge of what it has for, let's say, 80 to 85% of the race. I do give a little bit more to the lead lap cars sometimes than some other people do, but I just, you know, I feel like I raced Super 8 models for 13 years straight, and I won over 100 races and 22 championships, and I know what it's like to be a winner, right? And when you're leading and you get, you know, you get to the lap cars, it's like, it's kind of hard sometimes to deal with it. And I think that's one of my biggest weaknesses right now, is I give up a little bit too much in lap traffic, but when I am the lap traffic. But I also want the respect of those guys, that if I ever do get good enough to race with them, then they know that I know what I'm doing, right?
What was it like, BJ, as an owner, to be in meetings with NASCAR, to have a voice, to be involved in the processes and the feedback and all of that that goes into being an owner and the collaboration between the two sides?
It's awesome. It's something that you don't find in a lot of businesses, right? Like, you don't always get to work with the person that, you know, is providing you a place to work and work on a plan together. And that's what NASCAR's done and doing, right? Like, we have our meetings and go through stuff, and it's been very important to me to be a part of that and really to just listen. I haven't spoke book at all in any of the Cup meetings. I just, you know, try to learn from the people that are there, because they're all the people that I want to try to catch and then hopefully outrun one day. So it's been really good for us to get in those situations and try to, you know, develop ourselves and move together for a, you know, towards a better place for the sport.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that in every race this year, your car had a sponsor. That has to be a fantastic feeling going into your first year and had partners and everything filled out for that car.
Oh, absolutely. Like we wouldn't be anything without the people and our partners. And you're right, we had partners on the car every single race, and that was definitely hard work by Matt Tift and David Marrero's helped us, and he's just a lot of good relationships. Matt knows a lot of people, and I had some people that have helped me, and David has some people, and they were able to put it all together, and Joe Falk too. Joe had some people that helped us out, and it was really a group effort, mainly those guys, not me. But it was a group effort to make sure that was the case. And you're truly, I hadn't actually thought about that, because we worked so hard from week to week, and I really haven't stopped since I got home from Phoenix. But thanks for pointing that out, because that is really cool that we actually did have great partners on for every single race.
You did. And I feel like you and your partners, meaning you, the team, and your partners, also did a very good job of this year of being very engaging on social media, putting yourselves out there. I know there was giveaways from Keen Parts, so sponsorship and media obligations. It felt like, again, for a first-year team, from me looking on the outside, it felt like you guys were doing as much as you could to make sure you were on the radar.
Well, that goes back to one of your questions earlier, and Matt and I knew we didn't have a budget to race in the top 10, okay? But we definitely could afford to look like we belong in the top 10 on pit road. Our pit box is as nice as anybody's out there. Our pits are set up as nice as anybody's out there. The back of our trailer, like our trailer itself, everything is presented as a top 10 team, and we wanted our social media to match that. Matt is definitely the better side of that. I definitely lack. I'm trying to get better at it. But Matt and Juliet did a great job this year of making our team look good across those platforms. And that's something that Matt and I talked about before we ever started the team, that if we did it, we wanted to make sure that no matter what, we looked the part. Like, it'll take us a while to develop into the team that we want to be, but we can definitely work on presentation and make it right. And to your point, I think they killed it. Like, I think that we looked the part this year for sure.
That's awesome. All right, two more things and I'll let you go. Again, as I mentioned a few times, you ran a bulk of the races, but you put a couple other guys in the car. Andy Lally was one of them. Kyle Tilley, I believe. Heckert, you mentioned, yep. Golubic at the dirt race. For you, BJ, I think we talked about it last year when we did the podcast about your Xfinity program and helping other drivers and being a place for drivers to get opportunity. It seemed like that once again was reflected here in the Cup program, that it was important to you to put other drivers in the car.
Yeah, I know I'm not where I need to be on the road courses or the dirt track, right? Like, I believe on the asphalt ovals, I'm pretty good. Like, I know I need to prove a lot, right? Like, I've not got anywhere near the results that I need, but I actually believe I can drive those cars and those tracks pretty well. The road courses and the dirt race, I knew that we had some people that could do better than what I would do with, especially no practice and no time to work on getting better as a driver. And it's important to me to make sure that our team runs as good as it can every week we go to the track. So it was fun to work with those guys, and definitely wasn't on the driver development side. Those guys, I didn't tell them anything. I just went and hung out and had fun. So I enjoyed that part of it. And, they all did a good job for us. Shane was hauling butt, moving up, and got caught up in a wreck on a backstretch of the dirt race. And, Heckert did a great job. Tilley did a great job. And, it just, obviously Andy did great at Indy. And I think we had a left rear axle break there, but it was a fun year working with the drivers that we did have.
All right, last question. I'll wrap it up with this. You and Matt obviously were already friends. You came into this deal and decided you were going to do it together. What was the dynamic like of going from being friends to partners in a race team?
That was something I was very interested in learning for myself, right? Like, the only partner I've ever had is my wife. We've done everything together since I was 19. And, you know, it was definitely hard for me to, you know, accept that we were going to have a partner in the business. But I also never wanted to do it without Matt. Like, he's the first person I talked to about doing this. He's the only one that I wanted to do this with. And it has been really fun to figure out that our relationship changed absolutely none. Like, it's, we have different stuff to talk about now, but it really has not affected us one way in any way. And that's something that I know from business experience is very hard to pull off. It's extremely difficult. So it's been very pleasant to work with him this year and watch him elevate me in things that I need to be better at and work with me and help me as a driver also.
That's awesome. Well, BJ, I know the fans are going to be excited to hear from you because, as I mentioned, we did a podcast last year and people absolutely loved it. It was a very well-received podcast. The numbers were great, so I'm sure they're going to be excited to hear about the first year of Live Fast Motorsports. So thanks again for the time. I appreciate it. And I'm glad you had fun. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, definitely. And thanks for having me on, Kelly. I always enjoy being on with you. Appreciate it.
There he is.
How's it going?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, can't complain. Thanks for doing this with both of us.
Absolutely. Happy to have you back because I don't know if you remember, but we did a podcast about August of last year, or at least it was published in August. We might have spoken a couple weeks before that. And at that time, you told me, hey, I'm just trying to stay in the sport. I want to keep busy. And now look at you, a year later.
Yeah, a little bit busier than then. That's for sure.
Well, again, just a bit. Yeah, just a bit. Again, happy to have you back. So I'm going to ask you a couple of the same questions I had for BJ and then, of course, some specific to you. But let's start with the same thing I asked him. I'm sure you've been dissecting the year now that it's over, just reflecting a little bit. How was it? How was your first year involved as a team owner in NASCAR?
You know, I think there's two parts of it for me because there was definitely the personal part and then the business part. So I think I'll start with the business part. And from a business part of it, it could not have gone better. And that means from the sponsors, from our partnerships there that we've grown, to the finishes we had, getting our first top 10, and really just for where our budget was and the amount of people we had working in the shop, it was absolutely a year that we wanted to have, but really did not expect to have. So I know on paper people go, oh, okay, you finished 32nd in points, 31st in charter points. Is that really that impressive? Well, most people would probably say no. But when you work on the budget that we have and we had going into this year, with this deal being announced literally, you know, right before Thanksgiving of last year, that's a really hard feat to pull off. So it was definitely a whirlwind of ups and downs and people, you know, learning how to deal with that, especially as a small team and people working their butts off to make it happen. But, you know, looking back at it, you know, it was mentioned on, I think, the Xfinity broadcast in Phoenix, you know, I think it was Tommy Joe Martin's or something like that, talking about their race for the 20th position. You know, our goal was to stay out of the bottom three of the charters. And so we were able to do that. We were able to get close behind the 38 and the 77 and the 7 car right there in front of us in points. And I think when you look at times during the season, we were not too far behind them. You know, that's pretty impressive for us. And would we have liked to have had a few more solid runs or races, you know, have a situation go our way to pad the stats with a couple more top 20s or something like that? Sure. And that's the best competitor in us. But, you know, from that side, it really couldn't have gotten better. But, you know, the personal side was really interesting because you come into it, you know, for myself as, okay, you know, we bought all this stuff and we got the charter and it's going to be, you know, plug and play. You go ahead and things happen and we're going to get partners and this stuff happens. And I knew the partnership side, but, and I know that was hard, but, and that was going to be where my focus was, but you don't realize how hard this deal is, and meaning between obtaining sponsorships, getting one spot on the racetrack is so hard. And I think we've all learned that just from track position and without qualifying in practice, just kind of guessing of where you're going to unload without any previous notes. So that was a big thing of, you know, getting started. It's like, wow, okay, this is really hard. And, you know, luckily BJ had a lot of mentorship and you know, realistic expectations in there to kind of pass off some wisdom to me. But, you know, I think one of the biggest things too was, like you said just a few minutes ago, I had no spot in the sport last year. I was kind of looking. And so to be in the position we are now, involved in things that NASCAR is doing, even outside of the team, some of their initiatives, and just getting more and more involved in the sport has been really rewarding for me because I love NASCAR. You know, I was a driver, of course, but this is something that I've loved since, you know, since I can remember. So there was a lot of stuff between the stress of being an owner. My gosh, that part is hard because as a driver, you strap in, you go. As an owner, you just sit there and pace, or I'm sitting in the pit box and twiddle your fingers. So that part was definitely hard, but it is absolutely the most rewarding thing, even from being a driver. It's definitely the most rewarding thing I've ever done in the sport of NASCAR is being an owner.
So what you're saying there is you're not a very good spectator, though.
Oh, I'm a terrible spectator, yeah. I feel like I want to be on the radio every single lap, and I just got to make sure I don't press that button and let them take care of their jobs. And, you know, it's like the person that's scared on an airplane. They're like, oh, my gosh, what do we do when there's turbulence? And it's kind of the same deal. It's like, well, can you really do anything here? And then you have to ask yourself that, and you're like, well, no, I can't. Then you go, yeah, shoot, okay, well, I guess I can't do anything here. And then you just kind of sit there. So, that, you know, that's the hard part of it on Sundays, but luckily we didn't have too many bad days like that. But then when it goes the right way and, you know, you have a day like at Daytona at the end of the regular season and you get a top 10 out of it, that shouldn't happen for our budget. And of course, that's a place where things like that happen. But still, it's insane relief, enjoyment, excitement and stuff like that. So those moments in there are why you live for it in the competition side. And that was that eighth or the ninth place finish we had there matched my ninth place finish that I had in Daytona for the Cup Series finish. And this one meant a hell of a lot more to me than the one of myself driving, that's for sure.
That's awesome. All right, you touched on a couple of things I want to pick out and talk about. First off, you said there about the charter and being in the bottom three, and BJ admitted that that was something that he worried about as well. That was a big thing on everybody's mind this year, and you brought up the term budget. Matt, can you put into perspective for race fans or try to break it down for people to understand what was the Live Fast budget compared to those you were racing around, or however you want to break it down so people can understand what you guys were working with?
Okay, let me back it up to a story. This is when I'm not going to do any more of this of when I was driving, but this is the last one, I promise. But when I was at Front Row, we passed Daniel Suarez for finishing 20th. It was like the last lap or second to last lap. And so I was in 21st, passing for 20th. And so I got back to pit road, and the guys were excited, but not like super, super thrilled. But I was like, guys, and this is the third or fourth race of the year. And I said, guys, do you realize that, you know, they spent probably the price of, you know, somebody's house more than us to go come to the racetrack? I mean, that's the difference in there. So to compare it without putting hard numbers on there, you know, we're going to McDonald's and they're going out and getting a nice filet and a couple bottles of wine short. I mean, that's how it is. But at the same point, we have a race team that still shows up every weekend. We still end up being 0.3 seconds off at Phoenix from Kyle Larson's pace at times, maybe a half a second on there. So it's like, oh, we have a small budget. We do all this stuff. It's like, yeah, and people will roast you on Twitter and social media on that stuff and be like, they shouldn't be out there, blah, blah, blah. Where do you think Richard Childress came from? Where do you think Haas was in 2004, 2005? Where do you think Hendrick was in the beginning? Like, this stuff wasn't built overnight. And so the biggest thing there is you go, okay, well, what is a small budget team? A small budget team still operates on the fact that we buy all the tires for the race. We show up with a professionally prepared race car with some of the best-looking schemes out there, I must admit, for this year. I was very proud of our partners and the schemes we put together because our paint schemes are awesome. But then at the end of the day, you know, we fall short in a couple categories, and that's really the aero side for downforce, and we have a little more drag. And then the motor package, we just don't have quite as much power because of the package that we run, and it's just because we don't have the budget to go up and get some of the motors that the higher teams do. So when it comes down to that part of it, you know, yeah, we're a smaller team, but guess what? The smaller team budget still costs millions upon millions of dollars to go do it. So it's not like it's a street stock going out there. We're still spending our butts off to go out there and compete, but we race among a different group of people, and that's our race within our race there.
Right. Right, exactly. Everybody's racing for something, and everybody has their own race to run. For you, Matt, going back again, we had a very good conversation here on the podcast last year about you not being able to race and where you were in your life at that time. And you touched on it a minute ago about personally versus professionally of being back in the sport. How good was it for your mental health, so to speak, to be involved again, to have something to be invested in with this race team?
I think from a depressive state, it was fantastic. From an anxiety standpoint, I think it scared the shit out of me. to be completely honest with you, that's the dead honest truth. I mean, you put a $80,000 race car on out there, they're just like, okay, well, there it goes. It probably won't be any better next year with the next gen car, but you know, that's part of it. But you know, from an honest perspective of still being involved in the sport and being able to go out there and see race cars and, you know, being a part of NASCAR still and finding new ways to grow in that here over the last couple months and stuff, just becoming more involved and just trying to really lead LiveFast into the future. We know it's not going to be easy for the next year or two as we have this next gen car, you know, right away to figure things out, but we want to be here for the next 5, 10, 15 years down the road. And I think that the peace of mind comes in. As a driver, you have no idea each year what you can do. You know, you don't know if you have a ride or not, because most things are one-year deals. So this is different because you set a business plan, you stick to it, and hope it works. And if it doesn't, at least you tried. So I think that part of it is fun because, you know, it could be you're running franchise of restaurants, or it's a healthcare industry, or whatever it might be. The difference for Monday through Friday, the difference is we put a race car on the track on Saturday and Sunday.
And yeah, I think you touched on it, but it's a different feeling being a driver and being on the track versus watching a car you own being on the racetrack.
Yeah. You know, I struggled with that in the beginning of the year. Not so much Daytona, but I think the biggest thing I struggled with is I had to put myself into, you know, I would put myself into the seat too much in the beginning of the year. And what I had to shift my focus to was, okay, how can I, sitting on the top of this pit box, go, all right, from a bird's eye point of view, how can I go make this team better? Whether that was people or saying, hey, we need this engineering support or this technology or whatever this might be that we don't have right now. That was the biggest difference in saying, hey, we may not be able to afford that for 2021, but let's try to make a plan from the partner side to be able to have the budget for it next year, because that might go get us 2 or 3 spots. So, and you know, if coming from a place like Front Row and looking at them and JTG and guys like that, they didn't just jump up all of a sudden. It was incrementally doing that. And so I think we're on a similar path of how we want to do things. Now, again, next-gen car, who knows how that throws a wrench in for the first 2 or 3 years. But once we get past that, it could be giant leaps, or it could be, you know, that it calms down a little bit. But I think it's going to be, you know, a systematic approach that we take internally of trying to grow that part of it. So it's definitely a totally different mindset, driver to owner, because as a driver, you're not going, well, if I just had this for next year, maybe we'd be okay. As a driver, you want it then and now. But as an owner, you're like, well, I'd like that now. But when I look at my my wallet and nothing's in there to go buy that piece, I just can't do it.
Yeah, that owner versus driver mindset. I talked to BJ about that, since he's, of course, driving the car and owns it. That devil and versus angel, I guess you could say, on your shoulder.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's you know, I got to give props to him, because he's one of the best in situational awareness. And I think it comes from doing it for so long and having to be self-made and doing this so long in NASCAR, to where he has had to do that on the Xfinity side for so long, to where, you know, there's probably a situation this year that he probably saved us maybe 2 or 3 race cars and picked up probably 15 spots over the course of the year, which ends up being a lot of money and a lot of points over the course of the year. Again, going back to the point situation of the bottom three. So we escaped out of that and had plenty of cushion and completely surpassed that. So I think that's what you got to look at is say, okay, we may not be the fastest at times, but how do you manage your speed, manage the gaps, and put yourself in a good spot? And we'll have to do that for a little bit with the next-gen car because of the initial capital and stuff into that thing. But once we get going, the hope is for 23 is to build our partnerships and stuff enough to say, hey, we have a full lease motor program and rip it loose and go for it and have fun and not have to worry about anything. So that's my goal, is to get BJ in the car. He doesn't have to worry about a single thing other than how the car feels and, you know, in his butt of what he has to do. So that's my goal for him, is to get him there at some point. But that's the struggle and the goal of every race team, is to get to that point.
Well, let me throw it back to you in the sense of, he gave you props, as you just did to him, because you mentioned the paint schemes. And I told him that from what I could tell, every race this year, you guys had a sponsor on that race car. You had partners. You did great with your social media. There was giveaways from Keen Parts. I told him that from me looking on the outside in, that I felt like you guys did a great job of staying on the radar. And he gave credit to you and everyone else on the team for doing that. He said that's where you guys excelled. He's got to get better at it. But for you, Matt, how good did it feel that, as I mentioned, you guys had partners every week on that car? You guys did the best you could to be visible and really maximize your first year in this series.
Yeah, well, first off, I appreciate that from him and from yourself. And it's hard because when you're a small team like us, you don't get the TV time and you don't get the interview time. So the only variable that's a constant variable is your social media presence. And I made that a big point because that's kind of my side of the business, is that's our only constant variable. We got to go out there and make sure we do a damn good job at making sure that it looks good. So Juliet, who did our PR work for us this year, I thought she did an awesome job of putting out creative stuff. You know, we're a small team, so we push boundaries sometimes, which, you know, create a little bit of controversy of like, oh, was this, you know, we did like Martinsville, I think we did like X amount of retweets and we'll show you our wiener, you know, stupid stuff like that. But we kept it fun. And, you know, for me, being a fan of NASCAR and being a fan of other sports too, I think where sometimes we get stuck is the monotony of, okay, the car went out and we finished 11th. Okay, cool. We went out and the car's tight. Great. What else can we add to this? How do we add more flair? How do we get people excited and involved? And when it comes to Live Fast, the entire idea behind the name of it is Live Fast is, it's a brand, it's a way of life. It's enjoying speed and cars and excitement and adrenaline. It's all that stuff in it. So we got to create a voice and an identity for that. So I think that was how we found success with the sponsors. I think we had, after the first part of the season, we gained a lot of traction. And besides Nashville, I think we were sold out after maybe the March or April point of the season. So that was a huge, huge accomplishment, especially starting in a COVID year and everything in the beginning of the year. So that was a giant, giant success for us. And then now going next year, it's obviously just trying to keep on doing that again. But yeah, it's just, you know, the world is digital now. We know that. So we just have to keep on focusing on that part until we're good enough to be on TV constantly.
I got BJ's answer on this, and he broke down kind of how he viewed the year from a performance standpoint. So you, as the other co-owner, I want to get your take on it. How were you measuring success this year, Matt? When you went to the racetrack and watched that car and went home on a Sunday night, what was a successful weekend for you? What felt good for you?
Well, first off, no failures. That's the first stepping stone, because we have to have no failures in order to compete against the people that we were competing against. And luckily, we definitely minimized a lot of those. So that was step number one. Step number two was, okay, mile and a half, we had to be at least a 32nd place car, maybe 33rd, and finish, you know, probably top 30. And that was a successful day. Typically, we got that through attrition. And you know what? That's okay. That's going to happen. So typically, a 30th place finish on mile and a half was a benchmark of a really good day for us there. I know two people listening to this podcast, they're going to go, Matt, that sounds boring as crap. And trust me, it is not the most exciting thing in the world. But you got to play within the budget that you have. If I could go faster and put money into the car to go faster, trust me, we would. But that's just where it was. And so that's not for a lack of trying. You have people like Front Row Motorsports, like Roush. You know, sometimes we'd be racing with Rick Ware Racing a lot back there. You have a giant battle in that area, and you're maybe 0.2 away from being in the mid-20s. And it's so tight in the whole field. Andy Aspire back there all the time with us. And so it's so tight back there. But that was definitely the hardest challenge for us, was the mile and a half. But then when we went to the short tracks, that was definitely our strongest suit. So I'll be honest, we hoped to have had a lot more top 25s there. I felt like we came up short a little bit on that part of it. So I feel like we were straight up if we were a straight up 28th place car at them and finished 27th, 28th, that was a good day for us. I think we probably should have had two or three more top 25s out of the short tracks, but that's just being nitpicky about, you know, how strategy played out, or a caution fell the wrong way, or blah, blah, blah. You know, that stuff, there's always something to gain in there. So I think we probably missed a couple opportunities there. None of our fault, just how things played out. And sometimes our fault, but that was really the measure of success on those. And then the road courses and super speedways, of course, are so different. But going to Scott Heckert's races, you know, he did a great job coming in and doing races for us. Cal Tilley, I came in as well. And I feel like we had a couple good races in there. Some of them we struggled a little bit with our packages, but I feel like every time we went out there, we learned. And so those ones are so hard to tell on the road courses, just because it really goes down to engineering and data in the car and things like that. So we just really, we did a good job there, but just not a fantastic job. And then the super speedways, I thought we did a very good job executing strategy. The problem was two of the four, one, the Daytona 500, we had a problem to where we had to keep on pitting. Otherwise, we would have had a top 10 there. And then the Talladega race, we had a strategy that would have worked out great. Again, like our summer Daytona race to finish ninth. Unfortunately, it rained out for that one to not be able to complete our strategy. So, you know, overall, I'd probably, if I had to give it a grade, I would give it a C+. But it was better than I expected. But I'm a competitor, and I want to go run 25th every week. I want to go run 20th every week. So, you know, I'm never satisfied with where we're at. And that goes back to my side. If I can go find partnerships and get more funding for us, we'll get there someday.
Well, you always want more. But I think in your case, in the case of Live Fast Motorsports, this was a building year, right? You built your foundation. And I think you built a heck of a foundation to start off on.
Absolutely. No. So, you know, I can get into the details like I just did there. But at the end of the day, this was the best possible outcome that Live Fast Motorsports could have had for its first year. And I'm extremely proud of the success that we had. And I don't think it could have gone much better. So end result of the year for where we ended up in points, you look at the cars we raced around, how much closer we were to those cars these last couple months. I mean, we were racing against cars with much bigger budgets than us. I think that's where we go, hey, we made improvements, we did better, and that's all you can do is try to keep on improving as a small team. So, I mean, I was extremely happy with it, extremely pleased, and then coming out of Phoenix, another good run there for us in the 20s. So, again, for our budget and for what we had, we absolutely had a very good year.
That's good to hear.
Could have been a whole lot worse, to put it that way.
Of course, absolutely. I imagine, Matt, that you were probably pretty engaged, or at least present when it came to owners' meetings with NASCAR. BJ said he didn't say too much because he's all about learning. For you, what is the experience like being in meetings or having that access now to NASCAR as an owner when it comes to the communication between both sides and just everything that goes on there?
Yeah, you know, between the NASCAR and RTA meetings and stuff like that, I think it was a definitely in the beginning, you know, we're sitting there in the back, kind of just sitting there and shutting up, just kind of being the, you know, saying, hey, hi guys, we're here, you know, just making sure we're on the attendance list, but not much past that, but just soaking it up. You're in the room with so many people that are so knowledgeable about the sport. And I think the good thing is these last few meetings we've had, we've been able to speak up and been able to have little breakout sessions and kind of talk about things that we believe in. So I think that's been really good for the direction of our sport. But, you know, I think for us, the thing is just being recognized in those groups and having a voice has been a big deal. And, you know, ultimately, we're not Hendrick, we're not Penske, and we know that. But now we're showing up in those meetings, we're doing what we need to do, again, just to show up. So I think that's just such a big part of it is showing up, participating, learning, and, you know, we're not the smartest people in the group. We're not the most tenured people in the group. So taking the ideas, learn, see if it applies to us, and then by the end of the year, we're able to kind of start being a part of those conversations. Or just a very small part of it, but that was a very cool part of it to me. And from being a driver to the ownership role of it now, I feel like the driver was the tip of the iceberg, and then being an owner now, everything that goes on in NASCAR to push our sport the right way is like that 80% of the rest of the iceberg that's underwater that you don't see.
You and BJ, of course, have a long history. You're good friends. What's the dynamic like when you go from just being good friends to co-team owners? What was that like this year?
Well, that's why we split the podcast, because I'm together with him 12 hours a day. So it's like, well, we'll give each other a chance to not have to talk to each other for once. but honestly, we between our families and how much we engage with each other, we were talking about personnel the other day, and we wrote down the people we thought we should go hire, and it was the same list of people, and we thought about something else we should do, and it was the same ideas. Now, there's things we completely disagree off of, but that's going to happen in a relationship. So I think the good thing is we both have definitely learned how to work on each other's strengths and weaknesses, and so he's taught me how to be a better leader, how to be stronger as a person. You know, I'm pretty passive and pretty docile. He can definitely go get what he needs and get what he wants, and so I think I've learned some of those qualities, and I think I probably balance him out on the other side too. So it's a good relationship because different ideas are passed around, but then at the end of the day, everything we're doing is pushed to moving forward and trying to build the team. So, you know, he's like an older brother to me. So he taught me how to drive when I was 12 years old. And now here we are owning a Cup Series team at 25 years old. So he's definitely been in there for more than half of my life. So I guess you'd say, you know, we have a long history, that's for sure.
It's fun to watch. That's also for sure. All right, Matt, one last thing. You started off our conversation talking about what it just means this year to get through being an owner, to be involved in the sport. So my last question is probably the most important question, and that is,
oh boy.
Did you have fun?
I did, yeah. To be honest, I didn't want the season to end. It's not because I didn't want to go to the next gen car. We're extremely excited about that. That's exciting for us. It's not because I didn't want it to stop because, you know, I didn't want to get out of my rhythm or my daily week and weekly habits. I didn't want it to stop because we got into such a good groove and click with the team and things like that to where, yeah, travel's exhausting. Yeah, all that stuff is hard, but at the end of the day, it's like, hey, you know, we're getting in a good rhythm here. We're running well for where we should. BJ is having fun with this. And so when you get into that zone, you're clicking and you're going, and it's just like, you don't want to stop. And so that's why right now I'm excited to go to the oval test here with the next gen car. And then I'm excited to go to the Coliseum and the 500 and get back to that. Luckily, it's a short off season. Normally, I'd never say that, but I'm excited for it to be a short off season. So, you know, that's the part of it to where I've never, when I was a driver, I was excited for the off season. Right now, if you told me we had to go race next week, sweet, let's go do it. I guess that's how my mindset's changed.
That's awesome. All right, Matt. Well, I appreciate the time. I feel like we've kind of had a full circle moment. As I said earlier, we had a great conversation last year, and you were so open about your health and where you were, and now to kind of wrap it up after this first year has been really awesome. So I appreciate the time as always. I appreciate BJ's time as always, and I'm glad again that you guys had fun. You're here, and we'll see what's next for this team. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Absolutely. Oh, and one more thing to add on there, since you last talked to me on your podcast, I can drive on the road. So if you see a white Tesla and they can't figure out how to drive or park in a parking space, probably me.
That's awesome. Congratulations. We did talk about that the last time. That is a big milestone. That's awesome.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, but I'm also sorry for the other drivers on the road. So my apologies.
Oh my goodness. Well, again, life is good. That's all that matters. All right, Matt, I appreciate it.
All right, thanks, Kelly.
All right, and as we wrap up this week's episode, let me thank both BJ and Matt for once again coming on the podcast. I always enjoy talking to them. They are absolutely fantastic, wonderful people. They are also both previous guests of the podcast. So if you are looking for more content and want to go back through the archives, BJ was on the podcast in July of 2020. That's episode 130. And then Matt was on the podcast in August of 2020, episode 132. So if you're looking for more content on both of them and their individual stories, go back to the archives and listen to those episodes. They were absolutely fantastic. And it's kind of a full circle moment to go from those episodes and talking to them again about their individual careers and future hopes for the sport, and now having them come back as team owners. They kind of hinted at it in the past of things that maybe they'd like to do one day, so it feels very full circle to have them back on the podcast today. Thank you for clicking and listening to today's episode. Once again, I hope you're enjoying your winter, your holiday season, and enjoying the NASCAR content here on the Racing Writers Podcast. Let me know what you think by leaving a rating and review. By now, I hope you have hit that subscribe button so you'll get a new episode every Monday morning. Or you can also reach out to me on social media. My Twitter handle is at Kelly Crandall. You can also find me on Instagram, as well as a public Facebook page for all things podcast, as well as racer.com. And while you're at it, I'd appreciate it if you check out Patreon. Patreon.com/Kelly Crandall. It's just more content for you if you love the podcast and a way to support not only the podcast, but support me. So I hope when you're online this week, you'll check that out. The link for that is also in the show description of this episode. And with that, we wrap up our 2021 podcast season. But we're not going anywhere. As I keep saying, we are rolling right through the off season. The first episode of 2022 is another return guest. It's author Jade Gerst. Jade has another great racing book available, this time on Al Unser Jr. And my goodness, was it eye-opening and an absolutely incredible story. So we're going to have Jade back on next week to walk us through working with Al and so much of that eye-popping information that is in that book. I will see you next week for an incredible conversation right here on the Racing Writers Podcast.